Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Community Conversations on this fine Tuesday with Julie Calamine, my co-host, and myself, Phil Huff. Good morning, Julie.
Well, hey, Phil, how are you doing?
I'm good. We had a wonderful weekend. We've been following our habit of going out to Round Lake and spying on the wildlife. The pond is melting out more. The beavers are more active than ever. And we took a really nice pair of field glasses and watched them playing around and eating their stuff. And they are fabulous critters just to watch from the shoreline.
That really sounds like fun, Phil. I'm out there frequently as well, and I don't bring my binoculars, and I haven't seen them. So I'm going to start looking for beavers out there. Really sounds neat. Hey, before we begin our interview, I'm going to send a call out to KRFY listeners, and Phil knows a little bit about this. I've been looking for a person who lives in the Panhandle who might have been keeping track of the changes in weather, the changes in seasons from day to day. It's a topic that's defined as phenology, and I'll even define it for everybody. It's the study of cyclic and seasonal natural phenomena in relation to climate and plant and animal life. And there, Phil, I just have to think there's someone who's been living here forever that has been studying and making a journal and would want to get in touch with me.
There's probably all kinds of approaches to that, and our listeners will hopefully send some in. And it's always a good reminder, especially at the start of a new year, to ask our listeners if there is a favorite topic or guest they would like to hear on KRFY. Drop us a line, let us know. And you can do that in any number of ways, but I think the easiest is probably to go to the KRFY website and hit the contact button there. And just let us know who you might want to hear from. And if you have a specific person in mind, that's always helpful too.
Yes, and if you have a phenology guru, get in touch with us for that reason too. Well, all right, I've made my pitch for phenology, and let's move on to today's topic, and it's a great one. So, Phil, we're lucky enough today to be talking about Idaho Fish and Game update on Panhandle wildlife research. And we're lucky enough to have Kara Campbell. Kara is the regional communications manager. She's a certified wildlife biologist with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game Panhandle region. What a mouthful. Well, hello, Kara.
Hello, thank you for having me today.
Yes, it's good to have you here. So, Kara, this is kind of a formulaic beginning to our show. We do it almost every time, and we ask our guests to take a minute and tell us about themselves. So if you would, give us a bit of your personal background and how you came to be doing your work at Idaho Fish and Game.
Not a problem. So I am originally from the great state of Ohio, so I grew up in the Midwest, and I think like a lot of people, when they get a glimpse of the West, they don't turn back and they just keep in the area. So I went to school at the University of Montana and studied wildlife biology. And I did some jobs around the country after I graduated, ended up going to grad school down in Texas for wildlife biology, and then wanted to make my way back up here to the Great Northwest. And was lucky enough to get a job with Idaho Fish and Game as a regional wildlife biologist. And so I did that for about 4 years, and I recently just took over as the regional communications manager for the Panhandle region.
That is a great interesting background. You've been all over, and now you're back in the Pacific Northwest. And I've got to ask you one more thing about your long title. And within that title, I mentioned certified wildlife biologist, and there's a little R with a circle, registered trademark. Tell us about that.
Yes. So if anyone's heard of the Wildlife Society, it's kind of a national recognized group that's dedicated to education and conservation of wildlife and habitats. And so it's kind of, when you get into the field of wildlife biology, something that always comes up, and they're trying to get the latest and greatest with research and just information regarding management techniques out about wildlife just throughout the country. And so they offer a program that basically has some qualifications based on past schooling and professional experiences that if you meet those requirements, you submit and apply for an application, and a panel reviews that. And if you get approved, you become a certified wildlife biologist.
Now, how is that organization tied in with the Idaho Wildlife Federation, or are they completely separate things?
They are separate things. And so each state pretty much has their own chapter of the Wildlife Society. And there's something very similar in the fisheries world as well. And so there's usually annual conferences in states throughout the country about wildlife. And then they also have a national meeting annually. So it's kind of something that in addition to, you know, your job as a wildlife biologist or a fisheries biologist, it's kind of a professional society that you can be a member in.
I know a number of your colleagues, and I know many of them are involved with both of those associations. I've always actually wondered how they were tied in, so thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, no problem. It's a pretty cool group to be a part of and a great way to learn about the neat work that's being done, not only across the state, but in the country. And if you are a member, you usually get kind of quarterly magazines that they send you that kind of give you highlights about what's happening across the country. So it's a great way to kind of stay involved and learn about the new research that's going on.
Yeah, and that is what we're going to be talking about today. And I'll just bring us into our topic, our main topic, recent wildlife research in the Idaho Panhandle. Most of the research we're going to talk about today is part of a research effort that's been dubbed the Ecology of Everything Project. Will you please tell us about that?
Sure. So it's kind of a name we gave it ourselves here. And I say we, I have basically directly been working with this project the last few years, but it is a big part of our research here across the state. And so it's a project that's hopefully going to improve monitoring capabilities for big game and forested landscapes and determine how large predators and ungulate populations affect each other. And then based on those interactions, what management actions would be most effective in achieving desired numbers for each of those populations. So okay. It's a huge
yes.
project.
I'm just going to interrupt for a moment. You said forested. I think, yes, forested landscapes. And why is that an important distinction?
So we have research going on statewide on all sorts of different animals and species. Typically, when it comes to big game management, historically, aerial surveys have been done in order to kind of better understand our populations, to get counts on animals and to learn about sex ratios with our populations. And so in other portions of the state, they do fly aerial surveys in order to get this information. But here in North Idaho, it's a lot harder to do those surveys. They don't produce reliable estimates like they do in other portions of the state. So we're looking for other ways to get that information. And so this project kind of tackles a bunch of different avenues, but hopefully we'll develop new techniques that can use other things like game cameras in order to get the information we need to get.
I'd love to delve into the details of that, and I think we'll get there as to what those alternative techniques are, because I think most people think wildlife monitoring and aerial surveys or GPS collars, but I want us to continue a little bit with the landscape. In North Idaho, at least, most of our landscape is forested. But it's not all public land. Some of it's Forest Service land, some of it's Bureau of Land Management, some of it's state land, much of it's private land in the valleys. Draw us a picture for the jurisdictional boundaries you are able to conduct your study in.
So there are specific game management units. So if folks are wondering what a game management unit is, the whole state is kind of divided into these different game management units that we use in order to set season regulations and boundaries. And so there are maps of that available on our website. But this project is looking specifically at certain game management units here in the Panhandle region and in the Clearwater region. Specifically Game Unit 6, which is in the St. Joe Forest National Forest area. So basically from St. Mary's down to the bottom of the Panhandle region. So mostly the St. Joe Divide, up the St. Joe River and down the St. Mary's River as well. The project is hopefully expanding to other GMUs. Some of it, like I said, is occurring in the Clearwater region and other game management units. And we kind of started a pilot study last year in Game Management 1, which would be kind of up in your neck of the woods, so Sandpoint, north to the Canadian border. And the hopes is to continue in Game Management 1. There hasn't been a lot of research done there with our big game populations recently. And so we really want to get a better understanding of what's going on up there.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are in Unit 2 around Sandpoint, if I'm thinking correctly.
So if you jump across Lake Ponderay on the north side, so from Sandpoint north, that's going to be Game Management 1.
Okay.
Okay.
And south, I guess south of Long Bridge, that's when you get into Game Management 2, right. and 3.
So it's a pretty comprehensive thing. Let's talk a little bit more in terms of detail. What data are you collecting and how are you collecting it?
So this is a collaborative project that's not just Fish and Game. So there are other entities involved. The University of Montana and the University of Idaho have graduate students also working on this project. And so I guess the primary research questions, there are kind of five of them. And so the first one is, what methods can we use and or develop to help better monitor big game and predator populations in these forested landscapes of northern Idaho? And so that's using GPS collars as well as large game camera grids. And it's sort of a new technique to understand if we can get abundance or trend estimates from animals using these game camera grids.
So some of our listeners, many of our listeners will actually know something about studies that were conducted as part of the multi-species baseline initiative a few years back. And that focused on winter carnivores in the winter, and several organizations locally helped to support that. And so a lot of people are familiar with it being called the Wolverine Study, because there are camera bait stations set up to attract wolverine in, and also fisher and marten and lynx, and about two dozen other mammals ended up visiting those. And so I'm hearing a camera station, what draws in the ungulates? How do you attract a moose or deer or elk? Are you looking at really well-known game paths?
So that's a really, really good question, because these camera setups are different than what other people have heard historically when it comes to kind of game camera monitoring. So just kind of jumping back to Game Management Unit 6 is where this first grid was initially deployed here in the Panhandle region. And so there were about 250 game cameras deployed across the landscape. And how they were deployed is they were deployed in pairs. And so there was, let's say you get two cameras, and one of those cameras in an area was basically set out to pick up ungulates. So deer, moose, elk, and that was randomly deployed just somewhere on the landscape. Then within the same vicinity, we deploy a camera that will hopefully pick up other species, mostly predators, but it was placed on a road or a trail, whether it's a game trail or a hiking trail, or just like a closed gated road, in order to detect species that move on a road. So it's kind of a different array of cameras depending on what we're looking at. And so they're all over the place. There's no specific one way or another, but there was no bait used in order to bring anything into a camera. So these cameras are just deployed on a tree facing a rotor trail if it's a predator camera, or if it's an ungulate camera. Those were typically placed, if there was a tree in the vicinity, on a tree, just kind of out into the landscape. And so the big thing is that these are picking up animals whenever they cross in front of the camera, but these cameras are also going off in time intervals as well. And so it will take a picture every 10 minutes, whether something's there or not. And so there's a lot of research behind this that gets above my knowledge when it comes to the statistics, but they can do a thing called time to event. And it's how long before a camera picks up an animal.
And that makes perfect sense, especially if it's a camera that's able to survey the broad swath of a field and something's grazing over time. I do recall a friend of mine using a camera on their property, big ranch in southern Idaho, wanting to get a sense of where the elk were. Because it was motion activated, what he got was 3,000 photos in the first several hours of grass swaying in front of it. So the lesson learned there, of course, is to make sure that the sensitivity and the angle and all is right, so you don't pick up that. But
yeah, and that's really important to note. So there's been a lot of people that have kind of tested what settings to use on these cameras, because there's different sensitivity levels, how to deploy it, what height it should be in the tree, what angle. And so there's been folks working on this within the department for the last several years that have been doing game camera work. And so they've really mastered the best way to deploy these cameras in order so we don't end up with 3,000 photos of, you know, a branch swaying. Obviously, it always happens, you know, a couple times. But for the most part, we've gotten really good at trying to not let that happen. So we do remove vegetation right in the vicinity if we think it would trigger the camera, like you're saying.
Okay, so that was our item number one, methods, and we all understand GPS collars, and now we're understanding your use of grids and how that's being placed. Let's move on to number two.
So the second question, I guess, that we're trying to get is the influence of predators and habitat on big game populations. And so that kind of does go back to GPS collars. And so a large portion of this project is collaring animals, and we're collaring deer, elk, moose, bears, mountain lions, wolves. Like I said, it's a little bit of everything. And so hopefully we'll be able to understand how these animals move within a habitat, and at what time of year they're moving in certain areas, so we can get a better understanding of how they're using the landscape and what habitats they're focusing on or avoiding.
So how will that help inform decisions? You know where they're going and maybe the time of year they're going. Are you able to look at all at numbers and help to determine management levels, or what kind of actions will the study lead information to?
So hopefully we can get a better understanding, like you said, to inform management decisions. It'll be to understand if there are, you know, key areas that these animals are using, what type of habitats they are using it, and when they're using it, and how that could influence hunting season regulations as well. So all of this will be used kind of a greater picture to just get a better understanding of what are these animals doing, what are they using, or what key habitats are they focusing on, in order to better inform management decisions.
Okay. Well, let's just keep moving through the five. What's number three?
So the other one is how predators and big game numbers are related. So for example, that would be like our white-tailed deer maintaining a high level or a high number of wolf and lion numbers out on the landscape. So just kind of getting a better understanding of how they relate to one another, because we don't have a great understanding of that right now.
Basically, what's eating what?
Yes. And something so this like goes, that. Yeah. And so this goes back to the collar information. And so there were a lot of deer that were collared this past season across different game management units. It was about 211 white-tailed deer, 86 elk, 53 moose, and 4 mule deer recorded within North Idaho. So this does include portions of the Clearwater region as well. And it's hopefully gonna give us a better understanding, like I said, kind of habitat use, movement, but also survival raids. So like you said, what's eating what? And so it kind of goes back to these GPS collars. And so they're really informative and kind of a key tool that we use to better understand our wildlife populations.
So it's a fairly, it sounds like a fairly new approach. And so as such, you're as much setting baseline data for coming years as you are able to make any comparisons since you don't have previous data. How long is this going to go on for? Is this envisioned to go on for some time, in which case you're able to revisit this baseline data?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so a lot of this information is new information because we don't have the typical aerial surveys that other portions of the state do. And so this is kind of a big insight into how things are working up here that we typically haven't had in the past. So it's some pretty exciting information that we're about to get. This project is a multi-year study. It started in some portions of the state back last year, was the first year, but hopefully it will continue for the next several years. So basically on to 2023 or 2024. So it's definitely going to continue. And I'm sure it'll change and morph over time, depending on what we learn throughout the years. But it's going to be a great project that provides a lot of insight that we don't currently have.
Yeah, really good. Well, let's move on our objectives. I think we've got two more to go.
So one of the other primary questions is what influences the number of predators, predator species? So do wolves reduce bear and lion numbers? So how do predators interact with each other? And so one portion of the study is looking at collaring various predator species and then using that GPS collar information to determine how are they moving space and time throughout the habitats that they're in.
Okay. And I think there's a fifth objective. What was that?
Yes. So the last one is how can management alter the effects of predation on ungulate populations? And so this goes back to kind of what we use. One of our big main tools here with Idaho Fish and Game managing populations is through hunting seasons. And so if we alter hunting seasons, whether it's changing of tag limits or season dates, how could that affect predation on ungulate populations? So it's kind of this whole greater big picture of how management can play into altering predator populations and ungulate populations. So this is a big multi-predator prey species project.
Yeah, it's really important because I could see Idaho Fish and Game managing predator seasons in order to increase ungulates, et cetera, and vice versa. So it could really have some great benefits for game management in our state.
Exactly. And it's some pretty exciting stuff. And we're getting a lot of information, like you said, we haven't had in the past. And a lot of species that we haven't been able to monitor that we are being able to monitor now. So, and in other areas of the panhandle that haven't had research done in a long time.
It seems very intuitive that this would be a great approach, take a really big picture, holistic look at it. And yet I don't know that I've heard of this being done before. Is this done in other states? Has this been done before in Idaho? Is this cutting edge?
So some of the methods as far as using game cameras to look at ratios, so how many like elk calves there are to adult females or your bull to cow ratios and using game cameras is a relatively new technique, or trying to get abundance estimates from game cameras for multiple species is definitely a new technique. And so it's pretty exciting stuff that if we can figure out how to make it work, which it looks like we're going to get some great information from these game camera grids, it's going to be really useful not only to Idaho Fish and Game, but hopefully just wildlife research in general continuing forward.
Yeah, really interesting. Before we move off this topic, I'm just going to back up for the listeners for a moment and mention that the reason that we sort of the the original topic for this talk was going to be what's going on with the moose in Idaho. There had been some recent articles in the paper. And when we got in touch with you, of course, we learned that there's a bigger project studying, well, everything, as you've told us. But is there any data or any information yet that's providing any answers about the declining moose populations?
So moose are definitely a portion of this project, and moose statewide is definitely a focus for Idaho Fish and Game and better understanding what's going on with our moose populations. So moose populations are declining across much of their southern portion of their range. So it's not just a situation that's unique to Idaho. They're experiencing declines throughout, you know, Maine, Minnesota, most of the western states. So it's definitely cause for concern. And there's quite a few research projects that are happening with moose, with all the states out here in the west. And so Idaho is just one of the states that is conducting research. We do have some preliminary data that is available, and there was an article that went out a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that gleans a little insight into what we've learned so far. Our moose research project is hopefully to give us better information about understanding, reproduction, survival rates, movement patterns, resource use, and then the big thing is health status of moose populations across Idaho. And so it's research that is occurring here in the Panhandle region, but it's also occurring throughout other portions of the state, so in southern Idaho as well. And so there's kind of different projects that are happening with this as well. And it involves the University of Idaho and some graduate students that are looking at things as well. But it's kind of a multi-pronged approach in order to get some more information.
You said there's some preliminary information or theories out there already. What are the early prognoses? What's the driver?
So just this, like I said, this is only 1 year of information so far. And so we've kind of got adult survival and cause specific mortality information. So at the beginning of 2020, I think there were about 80 or so adult female moose that were collared throughout the state. Some of those occurring in northern Idaho, specifically in Game Management 1 and 6. And so the hope was in order to understand if these moose die, why are they dying? And so if they did die, a GPS alert was sent to biologists and graduate students to go out and conduct what we call a necropsy, kind of like a CSI investigation. So why did the animal die? The good thing that we've learned so far just from, you know, this last year is that adult survival was relatively high across the state. So about 89% of the collared adult female moose did survive, which is really great to know. Here specifically in region one in the Panhandle region, adult survival was slightly lower at about 86%, but that's still a really good survival estimate for these adult collared females. We did have them dying from various sources, I guess. Most of them occurred for health reasons. And a lot of those are things that I can't understand as far as diseases that were reported. But the majority of them that were died here in the Panhandle region were disease-related or tick-related. We did have one die due to predation, but what we were seeing is that most of the moose across the state, if they did die, it was from some sort of disease.
This has been studied for several years now, and I can't remember the exact number, but I want to say it was 3 or 4 years ago, perhaps, that there were broad-scale studies done of the decline in moose populations and included some in our area, but more intensively in, I believe, Minnesota and Michigan. And the studies found or had a high correlation between tick infestation and likely carrying certain parasites to the moose and that being one of the primary drivers.
Yes, and so one of the specific graduate students that's working on this project is looking kind of at the ecology of winter-type parasitism on the moose. So determining basically their influence on the moose and what's going on with that relationship. And so winter ticks are definitely a concern, and then the diseases that come along with it. And so that's one avenue that this research project is looking at. And in order to kind of get more information just from not only moose that have been collared, we've started using folks that draw a moose permit. So hunters that are lucky enough to draw a moose permit during hunting season have been issued a sampling kit. So if they are lucky enough to harvest a moose in the field, we've asked them to collect various biological samples and then submit those to us that we can send to our wildlife health lab to run diagnostics on various different diseases. And so it's a way for us to get our hands on more animals than those that are just being collared.
And how are you finding, what are you finding the responsiveness of the hunters to be? Are they pretty good about sending you the samples and getting you additional information?
Yes, they've been really good. So this past fall was the second year that we've asked hunters to kind of submit a sampling kit. It started the year before. And I think it took a little bit of information. They're given a letter that kind of explains what we're asking and why we're asking and why it is important for them to submit the information. It is all voluntary, so not everyone submits the requested samples, but a large proportion of them have been extremely helpful and are definitely interested to learn the information that we're also interested in learning. So I think that kind of, you know, it's not only benefiting us to learn more about our moose populations, but all these people that are harvesting moose are also greatly interested in the resource and want to know what's going on.
Well, we could probably talk about moose for a lot longer too, and maybe especially when the study progresses more and we have more data points, it would be interesting to do that. But let's shift a little bit for the time being. The ecology of everything looks like it's covering the large megafauna pretty well, the ungulates. Is it looking at some of the smaller critters on the landscape?
This project doesn't necessarily look at smaller species, but we do have a lot of other research efforts that are happening in the Panhandle and across the state looking at our smaller species. And so those are also important for us to learn information about. One of those projects up here in the Panhandle, which you guys have probably talked about before on your show, is the Bees to Bears project. Specifically looking at work being done on our Boundary Smith Creek Wildlife Management Area close to the Canadian border. And so it's focusing on species from grizzly bears all the way down to bumblebees and, you know, northern leopard frogs. And so there is a lot of research that is being done on other species as well.
And Kara, you won't know this, but it's interesting because we did just touch on that last week. We were interviewing folks from the Y2Y organization, and Smith Boundary Creek is part of that network.
Yes, it is.
So we know a bit about it.
Yeah, a large partnership kind of with multiple cooperative partnership between lots of agencies, including Y2Y. And it's a pretty exciting project, and it's going to benefit a lot of species.
Good. Well, so this is the start of a long-term project, and with all things these days, you want to make sure the future's secured. Is funding set by the state? Is it allocated that many years out, or do you have to constantly reapply for specific grants?
So funding can come from various sources, and so like the Bees to Bear project, there's grants that can be involved from various sources, whether it's federal entities or NGOs. And then there are dollars that do come from the state. So funding is, and universities as well. So it is a cooperative partnership between lots of agencies, universities, and federal funding.
Okay. And Kara, you mentioned that hunters, for at least for the moose, are supplying information when they've harvested a moose. But is Idaho Fish and Game enlisting help from other Idaho residents in any of this work, or is it all work done by the department?
A lot of work is being done by the department and, you know, our research crews, as well as the universities that are involved. We do ask people, kind of a thing that folks can do to help us out, just in general, big picture kind of information is, we do rely a lot on our harvest information and our harvest reports. And so if you are a hunter that was in the field this fall, whether you harvested an animal or not, we do ask people to submit their mandatory harvest reports. And those are actually due at the end of this month, and they can be submitted online through our website. And so that information is really important when we go into season setting.
Okay, and now I'm going to confess something. I haven't sent in my turkey report yet, and I'm sitting here not doing it, but knowing that I need to get to it. Just a question. I don't know if you'll know the answer, but what happens if we don't turn that in? Do Fish and Game come and collect us and take us to Fish and Game prison?
No, and actually it's for big game species management. So you're good with the turkeys right now. So it's those that had like a deer, elk, pronghorn tag that we really want to report. And then I'm sure later in the year, if you go to buy more turkey stuff, sometimes we'll ask you, did you harvest, or how much did you harvest? Or you'll get a mail survey that will ask you. We usually kind of do a random mail survey for a lot of that harvest information to folks that purchased turkey tags. And then we ask them, you know, did you harvest? How many days did you hunt? That kind of information. So these are for big game species, and we do say it is mandatory, but there is nothing that happens to you. You don't go to Fish and Game jail if you don't submit it, but it is really important information for us to know, so we know the amount of effort people have done during the hunting season, and then whether they were successful or not. And all of that plays into how we develop our season setting information for big game seasons.
Turn in your report, Julie. It's the right. I'll do it. It's the right thing to do.
Well, it turns out I don't have to turn in a turkey report, Phil. So I'm okay for the moment.
Yeah, for the moment. Good. Well, Kara, tell us a little bit more about your larger role as a communications manager, or other communications that you are working on. I know I subscribe to and get a number of emails from Idaho Department of Fish and Game, a wonderful one today with the newsletter in it about wildlife issues, Wildlife World, I think it is. And I know it's not the only one. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's lots of ways if folks want to receive information that they can get that information. So you probably are talking about the Windows to Wildlife newsletter that goes out periodically throughout the year. So folks are able to subscribe to various newsletters or kind of media blasts depending on their interest. So we have newsletters that can go out region specific. So if folks are interested in things that are happening here in the Panhandle, there's a Panhandle list. Or if they want to know what's going on in the Clearwater region, they can subscribe to a Clearwater list. There's also lists that are kind of focused on different species. So if people want to know anything related to big game species, they can subscribe to that list. Or if they want to know about things related to fishing activities and updates when things change with fishing seasons, there's a subscriber list for that as well. And all of those can be found on our website. And you can kind of pick and choose what letters or subscription lists you want to apply to. And then you'll get an email when anything related to that topic comes out.
Okay. And the easiest way to do that is what? Just to Google Idaho Fish and Game?
Yeah. So our website's idfg.idaho.gov. And if you click on that and look for subscription lists, it should come up.
All right. We've covered a lot, Phil.
We have. I do have one final question. I was waiting, hoping it would come up, but in this study of everything, have you found any Bigfoot?
That's a great question. You do get some weird pictures of stuff that sometimes are a little blurred and you're like, I don't know what that is. But there are millions and millions of photos that are coming in that we use recognition software to kind of sort through them. And I haven't heard of any Bigfoot being identified yet.
And I suppose that you can't answer this question, but if you did find it, you'd be obligated to tell us, right?
Oh, of course.
Yes. All right. So no verified Sasquatch sightings. I know that's disappointing to you, Phil.
Not yet, but there's hope.
That's right.
There's a lot of cameras out there, so you never know.
Boy, it sounds like it. Better be on your best behavior in the woods, listeners. There are cameras everywhere. Well, I think it's time to conclude then. And so I'm going to thank you, Kara Campbell. Kara, again, is the Panhandle Wildlife Research Regional Communications Manager, and she's certified wildlife biologist, and she is with Idaho Department of Fish and Game up here in the Panhandle region. Thank you, Kara, for joining us. This has been Community Conversations here at KRFY. Thank you, listeners, for joining us, and we will catch up with you next week.
Well, this wraps up another Community Conversation. Thanks for listening to KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org. And all of our Community Conversation shows are recorded and saved as podcasts on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Currently, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at high levels across our state and region. In Idaho, we are at stage 2 level of restrictions and recovery. And Bonner County is currently at the red level, the highest level for risks of impact from the COVID pandemic. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. If we help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses, and keep a 6-foot distance apart from each other. Wash up and stay at home as much as possible, and stay home if you are sick. Stay safe, and thanks for listening. And before we close, we'd like to tell you about a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to see what song you have been listening to, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page and find the playlist link. Then you can see the song you just heard. Until next week, enjoy all of our great programming, including Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long.